Thou shalt not bear false witness. Now, number 10, thou shalt not covet. Look in Exodus 20:17 for a minute. This is an interesting place. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Now, what does it mean to covet? Well, it means to long for. To lust. Lust is, a lot of times we think about lust as a sexual thing, but you can lust after anything. Achan lusted after a wedge of silver and a Babylonian garment, say. To have a strong desire for, to want, to obtain and possess a thing is to lust after. It's to covet that thing. The Bible said, thou shalt not covet. Now, there's a number of really good reasons for that. We're only going to talk about a couple. Number one, the root of covetousness is discontent. You're not happy with what you have. You're not happy with your position or station. And so you want something you don't possess because you're not content with what you've got. Or you want a better position or place or station in life because you're dissatisfied, you are discontent with who you are and where you're at and those kind of things. So the fundamental root problem of covetousness is it's an underlying discontent with your life and where it is or what it is. Now, the thing behind discontent is pride. Only through pride cometh contentions. You got it? Only through pride cometh contentions. The only reason trouble gets started, the only reason people are malcontent or discontent is because they have a pride problem. Pride's the number one sin in the Bible. It's not murder. It's not adultery. It's not any of those things. The number one sin in all the Bible is pride. If you could take your rightful place before God, recognize, realize who you are, what you are, and be perfectly content with where God put you, you wouldn't have a problem. But none of us want to do that. There is not an individual in this room that's worth 15 cents that does not have a problem with pride. They say he's got ego. That's pride. That's just pride that's trying to assert itself. Some people have pride and hide it. But if you've got any ambition, if you've got any gumption, if you've ever managed to achieve anything or accomplish anything, it's because you've got a certain degree of pride in you. Now, where that becomes wrong is a really sticky little place. Without some pride, you've become a dish mat. You're worthless. Yet there has to be a point when pride becomes wrong. Now, that could be a different place for all of us. But boy, do we have a problem with it. Do we ever, ever have a problem with it? In Psalm chapter 23, the Bible said, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Y'all want me to go someplace else? I shall not want. Has anybody in here kept that today? Do you know how near impossible that is? How many of you got a catalog in your house? A Sears Roebuck catalog, Monkey Ward catalog, big old catalog. How many got a newspaper with sale papers in it? Got a television with advertisements? You know what those things are designed to do? They are designed to make you want. To want. To want. Those things are created to cause you to covet. Those things are designed to make you lust. That's all they're good for. That's all any advertising is. They put something in your eye gate that gets in your heart and you are convinced you can't live without it. I've got to have one of those. Now, I don't know how you get around all of that, other than just trying to keep it in check and keep a handle on it as best you can. Because you live in a world that just literally flaunts itself at you all day, every day. So, everybody I know has a problem with this thing, thou shalt not covet. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 26, the Bible said, they covet greedily all the day long. That's probably written about America. Because we want everything. You say, well now, preacher, isn't it normal to want a house or a car or nice clothes? Yeah, it is. Well, where does that become wrong and turn into covenant? How do we distinguish between a proper want and an improper coveting? That's a darn good question. I wish I had an answer. Here's the best I can do. When what you want would inflict injury, demean or hurt another, cause another to suffer loss, either materially, financially, emotionally, socially, or what you want interferes with duty, obligation, responsibility to God, it's out of hand. For example, I want a new car. Actually, what I want is a Mark 8. That's what I really want. That's what I want. I hate that Ford Windstar I'm driving. I haven't liked it since the day I bought it. I want my Lincoln back. Now, suppose I want that Lincoln. Is that wrong to want a Lincoln? I hope not. I want it. Now, let me tell you how it could be wrong. If I set my heart on that Lincoln, and I can't really afford it, and it's not in my future, but I connive and contrive a way to be able to get it. Of course, in the process of that, I'm going to have to take myself away from my family. And I'm going to have to take myself away from service to God. Maybe work a part-time job that's going to keep me out of church. Work overtime that's going to cause me not to be able to study and prepare. Now, I want that car way too badly. If I could afford that car and maintain my duty to my family and to God, and God just kind of gave it to me in the natural course of the events of my life, that's fine. But if I have to go out of the way, bend the rules, or put people off, or do disservice to God to get it, then I covet. That is, I wanted it in an unreasonable fashion, and I'm not entitled to it. And that can be anything in your life, anything that gets undue attention and puts undue pressure and causes you to do irrational, unnatural things to acquire it. It's wrong. They said, well, who's going to figure that out for me? Not me. Buddy, it is all I can do to keep my life straight. What you're going to have to do is you're going to have to settle that in your heart between you and your God. The preacher can't walk up and say, I see you got that nice truck out there, buddy. God didn't want you to have it. You had a nice car and you went and bought that dumb truck. You coveted it. You wanted it. And nobody in the world got a right to do that. You don't know what goes on in other people's hearts and in other people's lives. And what may be coveting to me may have been a natural course of events in somebody else's life. So you can't sit around and judge. Wouldn't speculate. But oh, preacher, you are wicked. But you understand what I'm saying? There are some things in this life that you as an individual believer, as a priest unto God, have got to decide and determine for yourself. And nobody else has got a right to stick their nose in it. They don't know what goes on in your heart. That's between you and God. That Bible said, and every man shall stand or fall to his own master. First time I bought a Lincoln, we've been driving Lincolns for 15, 18 years till I bought this sardine can we got. First time I went to Virginia Beach in it, you would not believe all the flack I took over driving that car. Because a certain preacher up there had determined that you couldn't spend over $5,000 or $6,000 on a car. Well, now, I want to tell you, my Lincoln cost more than that. So they knew immediately we were living in sin. You think I'm kidding, don't you? I'm telling you the dying truth. They're good folks and I love them, but God knows they are stupid. I mean, they're just plain stupid. I prayed a long time for that Lincoln. And I didn't begrudge myself at one bit. But they arbitrarily decided if you have this or this, then you have coveted and you've given yourself. You can't do that kind of a thing. There are certain things when you see people do them, you can say, that's sin. If I catch somebody committing adultery, we don't have a problem with that, do we? Catch somebody drinking, smoking, that's sin, that's wrong. And we can judge that and we can name that. But boy, there are some other things in our lives that we got to settle between us and God. One, it's nobody else's business. Two, nobody else could possibly know what the truth is. And some of that coveting stuff is in that area. You have to figure it out for yourself. Do I want this inappropriately? Do I want this too bad? Am I making too many sacrifices to acquire it? Ain't nobody can make those calls but you. And you better be honest about it. Because boy, does God hate covetousness. Let me show you what God thinks about it. Let's see, where's that at? In Psalm 10, verse 3, the Bible said, for the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire, and blesseth the covetous, whom the Lord abhorreth. You get what that thing said? That thing said that God abhors people who are covetous. To be covetous shows a real disrespect and a lack of gratitude for what God has given you in this life. It shows you're unthankful. And that upsets God. You say, well, God made me poor. Then God must have known what you needed. God knew if you had any money, you never would be in church. Now, the way, only way God can keep some people serving God is to keep their nose right down in the dirt all the time. Every time God takes his finger off, they get all puffed up and run off on him. Now, I'm not one of those. Are you? We must be talking about somebody out there. Because nobody here is guilty. What's the main thing that leads to a covetous spirit? My eyeball's right there. Joshua chapter 7, verse 2. Achan said, I saw, then I coveted and took them. Most of the things that we covet are things that we see. Now, sometimes I have walked into the house and smelled the spaghetti sauce and coveted, say, but that's pretty rare. Most of the time, what you see, this eye gate's what causes you trouble. That's the reason all this modern advertising and stuff is so wicked. It's insidious. It plants subtle desires and longings. It causes discontent and dissatisfaction. Advertising is designed to make you think you're missing something and that you've got to have something. And it works. People spend hundreds of billions of dollars every year buying stuff that they could have lived perfectly well without and were perfectly happy without until they saw one. You know one of the dirtiest things we've done in the last century? We've taken all of our modern technology, all our telecommunications, and gone over to Africa and some third world countries where they don't have TV and where they don't have all that stuff and where they have been happy as a pig in the sun for 5,000 years, living in mud huts, just oblivious to everything that's going on in the rest of the world and perfectly happy that way. And went over there and showed them all of our cars and all of our tractors and all of our VCRs and all that junk. And now they are ticked off at the rest of the world because they've been underprivileged and deprived. We have made them miserably unhappy and totally discontented. Aren't we great folks? We have screwed up a whole continent with our advertising and with our junk. You know what we've caused that whole continent to do? We've caused them to covet. It's a tragedy. It's what that is. Luke chapter 16, verse 14. You know I'd have to get the religious aspect in here. And the Pharisees also, who were covetous. Covetous of what? Now the Pharisees are accusing Jesus Christ. They're taking him to trial. So why do they do that? Because they were covetous. Covetous of what? He didn't have any money. He didn't have wealth. He didn't have great houses. He didn't even have a great reputation. He didn't even have a great following. Yet they were covetous. And they wanted to kill him. Covetous of what? The glory the people gave him. The honor that he received. You see, you don't always have to be covetous of some guy's house or some guy's wife or whatever. Verse 17 there names about five or six things that you can covet. It's, or anything that belongs to thy neighbor. You can covet all kind of things. But it doesn't have to be material things. A lot of times people who are in the limelight or who get attention, people are jealous. They are envious. They covet that for themselves. Did you ever think how difficult it is to separate covetousness and envy? 9 times out of 10, when you covet what somebody else has, you envy them because they have it. And you are discontented because you don't have it. And your pride says, I got as much right to it as they do. And so you've got this unholy trinity down there. Covetousness, envy, and pride. Those are the big three. Those three things will cause you 99% of all your spiritual trouble your entire Christian life. You're going to have to battle those things and deal with those things and work with those things day in and day out. And people say, well, preacher, I got a handle on it. No, you don't. You just got temporary victory, but you better look out because it's coming back again. You're going to have victory over it totally and completely till they put you in that pine box and stick you in the dirt. That thing about being covetous, buddy, covers a lot of ground. It's an insidious thing. It is desperately hard to get rid of. It is unbelievably difficult to control because there's something natural in us. We have a natural proclivity to want. To want. To want. And if you just paint it up pretty, put some chrome on it, gold plate it, make it shiny, we want it. We want it. Say, do you need that? No, but I want it. Where are you going to put it? I don't know, but I want it. Well, if you get it, what are you going to do with it? I don't know, but I want it. I'm going to get one. Got a problem. We've lost all reason, all sanity about having and acquiring material possessions. That is not what life is all about. Somebody's going to say, yeah, but preacher sure makes life nice. And that's true. It does. I'm not trying to get around that. What I am trying to do is you better keep that thing in proper balance. You better keep it under control. You better keep it in check. Because it'll get a hold of you, and before you know it, God won't be part of your life anymore. It is so easy. It happens all the time. In 27 years of preaching, I know scores of people who have started out serving God and loving God, and they got their eye on something in this world, and they wanted it, and they set out to get it, and they got that, and before they could quite acquire it, there was something else they wanted. And it started a long chain of decline in their life. And in just a year or 2 years, they're not in church anymore, they're not serving God anymore, God is not a part of their life, they have given themselves over wholly to pursuing the things that their heart longs after and lusts for. They've given themselves over to covetousness. And if you talk to them, they are not even aware how it happened. It was so slow. It was so subtle. It just snuck right up on them. And they didn't even know they were being trapped. You say, well, can't you tell them and get them back? There's something about a cold heart that is very difficult to warm back up. My wife asked me, she gives me leftovers sometimes because she's too cheap to buy me anything. I'm just teasing. She'll say, we have something left over from dinner when she cooks. And how's that feel, Mark? Does it feel good? She'll say, you want me to put that in your lunch tomorrow? You want some of this one day this week? And a lot of times I say, yeah. But sometimes I say, no. You say, why not? Because some things don't warm up well. Some things you can pop in the microwave, you can nuke them, and they're great. Pinto beans warmed up are just, they're better the second time they were the first time. I love them. Just, they are great. But you ever try to nuke roast beef? Time you get it hot all the way through, it is so dry that you just can't eat it. It's nasty. There's some things you put in that microwave. Chicken pot pie, my wife makes the best. Glory to God. Best chicken pot pie. And if we have any left over, which is very seldom, and if we ask Galen down, it's never. She said, do you want me? It doesn't heat up well. It just gets so dry, you can't hardly eat it. Cold hearts don't heat up well. Matter of fact, you cannot heat up a cold heart with conversation or reason or logic or any of those things. It just doesn't work. When somebody's heart gets cold, when they've given themselves over to covetousness, pursuing the things of this world, you are wasting your time. Until and unless God moves on the scene. Now the Holy Spirit can warm a cold heart. But people say, well, if you just go explain it to them. It don't work like that. It just doesn't work like that. Well, preacher, if you just go tell them. It doesn't work like that. God, the Holy Spirit. Now I know sometimes you go and God will use you. I understand all that. Don't misunderstand me. But if you think just natural reason and human logic will get the job done, you're about half crazy. It doesn't work that way. When a person's heart gets cold on God, it takes a work of God to get it hot again. Boy, there's been very few, have I seen, over the years, when they drifted away, come back. It's very few. Very few. And almost invariably, there was a tragedy involved to get them back. When they drift away, as long as things go reasonably well, they are perfectly content and oblivious to what they have lost. It is only when tragedy strikes that God gets their attention and brings them back. And that doesn't always work. There's something about that spirit of covetousness. It said, and they covet greedily all the day long. That thing gets your heart. It shows your discontent with God and what God's done for you. It reveals your bitterness and your resentment, your lack of gratitude. Charles Haddon Spurgeon said one time, a man who is thankless is well nigh hopeless. Now, when I first read that, I thought that was a strange statement. But I've been looking at that thing for 20 years now. And he's absolutely right. When you can't be thankful for what God's done for you and for where God's put you, if you can't be happy and content in Jesus Christ to serve Him in a little town like York, in an ordinary job, in an ordinary place, if you can't be content with that, you got a real problem. And covetousness is simply a revelation, a revealing of what was right in here all the time. You better watch that thing. It'll eat you alive. And it will rob you of any spiritual workings in your life. It's a dangerous thing. Thou shalt not covet. Goodbye. Father, thank You for Your goodness. Thank You for Your mercy.